for joining us today for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. We are so happy to be part of this station. Dr. Zamperone and I have been bringing you cutting-edge information in natural remedies since 1987, I guess our first radio show was on, and then we joined this Progressive Radio Network when they came to air. So we've been doing a very long time, and we love to hear from you because our audience gives us so much feedback about our many guests that we have, topics that we have, and, of course, the changing political environment and the regulatory issues involved in procuring and understanding more about natural living. We have lots of classes coming up. For instance, we have a thyroid, adrenal, pituitary, the sacred trione class, and that is online. So you can join that from wherever you are. And we look at the energy centers within the body and the need to balance and maintain them, particularly the thyroid, adrenal, and pituitary glands, as well as the pineal glands. And that is going to be coming up very shortly, and that's actually online. And then we have herbal certification courses available both online and on ground, where you can get CE credits if you are a health professional, such as a nurse, midwife, registered dietitian, massage therapist, acupuncturist. All of those get certified CE credits towards your, usually you need a recertification. And for those of you who don't have a license, you can also take these classes, and then you get a certificate rather than the CE credits. So those are open to all. You can find out more at naturalnurse.com. Click on calendar, and you will see many of our upcoming offerings. Today, we are so happy to have as our guest Dr. Karen Louise Herbst. And Dr. Herbst is an associate professor at the University of Arizona Medical School in Tucson and director of the TREAT program, which stands for Treatment, Research, and Education about Adipose Tissue. The TREAT program is multidisciplinary, and it's a research program looking at ways to better understand, diagnose, and treat other adipose tissue disorders. The Lipedema Foundation provided a lot of the initial funding to establish the TREAT program. Dr. Karen sees patients at the University of Arizona and at the Herbst Clinic. She specializes in lymphatic system issues, lipedema, and other adipose tissue disorders. Currently, Dr. Karen's clinical research centers on understanding the underlying pathophysiology of adipose tissue. And by the way, everyone listening, hopefully you do know adipose tissue means fat tissue, including the lymphatic system, as well as treatment options such as natural supplements, which of course will be our focus today. Her basic science research aims to find gene mutations in families with various illnesses such as Durkheim's disease. Dr. Karen received her MD from Rush University and did her residency at the University of Washington School of Medicine, and she is board certified in internal medicine and endocrinology, diabetes, and metabolic subspecialties. Additionally, Karen is active in fat and lymphatic disease advocacy and education with the Fat Disorders Research Society and other organizations. She travels extensively to address patient and professional groups around the world, and she is one of the co-authors on the informative book, Lymphedema and Lipedema Nutrition Guide. And for more information, you can listen to the archive and click right on the website, or just go to Lymph Notes, that's L-Y-M-P-H, Notes, N-O-T-E-S, .com. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Karen.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, this the website that goes along with the book, you know, really has a lot of information on it. So I imagine you all put this together to be very consumer-friendly.
Yeah, I think the book itself is easy to read by anybody, and it was written primarily for patients, but also for patient family members, friends, and physicians as well. And then I think a website, even without having to purchase the book, provides a lot of information. The book just goes a little bit more in depth into lipedema, lymphedema, and the nutrition, and also provides a lot of pictures and recipes as well.
So let's go back in time and share with us what made you become a doctor. And you actually have a PhD as well as an MD.
I do. I took the long road. So I got my PhD first. And I did think about medical school at the time, but I was very interested in learning how to develop tools to answer questions that I had. I just felt like I had a lot of questions about the body. And I personally have hypermobility, which means my joints are very flexible. And along with hypermobility comes the deposition of different kinds of fat tissue that we really don't understand, but these fat tissues are resistant to weight loss by diet and exercise. And I think that, you know, having my own medical issues and looking at my family and trying to figure out whether I inherited some of my issues, and then looking at other people and especially mothers and daughters. So when a daughter has different fat tissue and looks very similar to her mother, that just intrigues me. And I knew that there was something genetic underlying it. And after I finished my PhD, I took a couple years off and did a postdoctoral fellowship in Utah, which I absolutely loved, and then went back to medical school. And in medical school at that time, you couldn't go into or have a career in fat tissue. It just wasn't available. And so I went into endocrinology because endocrinology is the study of hormones, which includes diabetes, and a lot of people with diabetes have excess fat tissue. And they also have high blood fat. So I thought that was perfect for me. And I became did my fellowship in endocrinology at the University of Washington, as you mentioned. And it was there that I encountered people who had fat disorders for the first time. And I knew that that was the place for me. I had other things going on at the time, which I finished up. And since then, I've done nothing but see patients who have fat disorders and do research in this area.
So you actually moved towards your original interest as your high-end specialty.
Yeah, I did.
That's very satisfying.
And I didn't really understand that until I got diagnosed with hypermobility. And it all just, you know, made sense to me at that point. I looked back and I said, oh, you know what, I've really tried to figure out myself. And in doing that, I've linked up to now a whole bunch of other people who have fat disorders. And I'm not obese. In fact, my BMI is 21. But people who are very thin can have fat disorders, and that's what some people don't understand. They think, oh, you have a fat disorder, then you must be obese. But that's just not true. Yes, many people who are obese have a fat disorder, but thin people can look terrific. And people say, wow, you look great. And they say, well, I don't feel great. And I think that's something I would like people to understand. And it's about 25% of people who have fat disorders are not obese.
That is certainly enlightening, I'm sure, to many of our listeners. Now, it's interesting to me that you are at the University of Arizona, because I've been very involved there over the years since I've been doing holistic medicine since 1964.
Wow.
And I came there several times when Andrew Weil was actually beginning the department,
mm-hmm.
you know, more of a holistic study that I'm sure
mm-hmm.
you're aware of.
Mm-hmm. I am very aware. Their Department of Integrative Medicine is world-renowned.
It is. And so, you know, that's something I always find, that then once there's that kind of powerful association within a school, that seems to open up dialogue for evidence-based therapies involved with nutrition and perhaps supplements for various
mm-hmm.
medical issues, because it is so well documented and yet so ignored in many places in terms of mainstream medicine.
I completely agree with you, and I actually was at a different institution before coming to the University of Arizona, and I came to the University of Arizona because of their expertise in lymphedema and the lymphatic system. But luckily, they have the Department of Integrative Medicine there as well. And over the years, as I've tried to help people who have fat disorders, lymphatic disorders, and lymphedema, what I noticed was there are almost no medications to help treat it. So I began looking into the literature, and I found nutrition, and I found supplements. And I'm pretty much so self-trained in this area, and I think a lot of people are. But I have started a dialogue with the Department of Integrative Medicine. I would love to do some more work with them.
You know what? That probably will happen because you obviously are an avid learner. And, of course, functional medicine, perhaps you'll even become certified in functional medicine. And when you do that, you really have a huge grasp on many, not only natural remedies, but the evidence that's behind them, their mechanism of action, and a more, I would say, advanced approach to testing individuals, such as organic acid analysis. I'm not sure if you're using that, which really, really clarifies different kinds of fat disorders and fat metabolism disorders.
I have done some organic acid analysis. Right now, what I do on a regular basis is look at a fasting level of essential fatty acids, and I use that to guide my use of omega-3 fatty acids, as well as look for any deficiencies that people have in terms of you know, fatty acids that you can't make in your body naturally, and then help them supplement that. And I was very surprised that people could actually be deficient in fatty acids with all the fat that we have available to us in our diets. But every once in a while, someone does come up deficient. So I think that's a useful test.
It
but I think you're right.
And
I would love to.
Any doctor could order it. Of course, they don't usually because they don't even know that they'd want to know that.
Correct. That's right. And I didn't get taught about supplements generally in medical school. And I think there's a lot of testing available to us today that we still don't get taught about in medical school. And you're right. And the evidence is out there. It's just that we need to put it down on paper in a form that they can understand and then get the word out there.
So true. Now, let's backtrack a little bit because, you know, we have a lot of listeners on with us, and we've been talking about the name of the book and the name of your studies. We're talking about lymphedema and lipedema. It could be very confusing, especially on the radio, without seeing that these are two separate words. Could you please go into this, Dr. Herbst? And how do we say your last name?
Herbst, you got it right.
Did I get it right? Okay.
Yep.
So can we talk about what is lymphedema, L-Y-M-P-H-E-D-E-M-A, this is for our listeners, versus lipedema, L-I-P-E-D-E-M-A?
So lymphedema, L-Y-M-P-H-E-D-E-M-A, is when the lymphatic system is not functioning normally. And it can either be a primary cause, meaning a person is born with a damaged lymphatic system that either doesn't exist or has malformations in it or it's leaky. And we know a lot of the genes for these primary lymphatic disorders. Someone can also develop lymphedema later in life because of a surgery for cancer, for example. So it's well known that when you have breast cancer, if they remove the breast or remove a lot of lymph nodes especially, that a person can develop lymphedema. And that's called a secondary lymphedema, meaning it happened because of something else. They were not born with it. In lipedema means edema in the fat. And we are not exactly sure why this fluid is in the fat tissue itself, but interestingly, it's held within the fat tissue, and it doesn't migrate down the leg and accumulate around the feet or migrate down the arm and accumulate on the hand as in lymphedema. So so the fat tissue holds on to this fluid. And eventually, people who have lymphedema, LIP, can develop secondary lymphedema. So the lymphedema would be secondary to the long-standing lipedema.
Okay, so you can have both, it sounds like.
You can have both. And in lipedema, there is an abnormal fat accumulation, and we think that happens first. So the fat is there, the lymphatic system is abnormal within the fat, the vasculature, the blood vessels may be abnormal within the fat, and over time, the lymphatic system begins to wear out and develop aneurysms or a little weak areas in the blood vessel, and then will eventually leak. And that when that fluid leaks out, it basically falls down due to gravity and accumulates around the ankles. But in lymphedema, the fluid comes first, and that fluid is rich in proteins and electrolytes and nutrition and cell waste materials, and that can make the fat grow secondary. So in lipedema, fat's first, then the lymphatic dysfunction occurs. In lymphedema, the fluid accumulation occurs first, and then fat can grow secondary to that. So they overlap, but I really do think they have different mechanisms of action to get to the final disease state.
Okay. Now, do people usually have both if they have one, or is it possible to have one and not the other?
You can have one and not the other. So there are many women, in fact, we think there are millions of women with lipedema who have the abnormal fat tissue but do not have lymphedema. And when I'm examining a woman who has lipedema, I check to see if she has heavy fat tissue. Because when there's heavy fat tissue, there's fluid in the fat. And we call that the secondary lymphedema component of lipedema. But it's not the same as that lymphedema that accumulates around the ankles. And I just need to say that somebody who gains a lot of fat tissue on their body because they take in too many calories or they don't exercise enough, so lifestyle changes, they can also develop very heavy tissue, and we call that, you know, edematous fat tissue, and that's different from lipedema. It's just that when fat becomes thick, it accumulates fluid and becomes heavy, and so that can happen because of either obesity or lipedema.
Okay, so that was a very telling last snip to that sentence, so I'm going to revisit that, because it's a confusing topic. You know, especially
it's very
since the
confusing.
Names
I'm
sound
still confused.
So much the same. Now, in terms of obesity, mm-hmm. are we saying? Well, first, my first question is this only for women? Because you have been saying women.
Yes, it is not only for women, but primarily it occurs in women. It can occur in men, and if it does occur in men, they usually have a low testosterone level, and that usually happens. Early on in their life, so if you ask a man with lipedema, did you ever have problems with testosterone in your lifetime? And they can usually tell you yes, because they developed gynecomastia or breast tissue, which, you know, large breast tissue, which is not normal in a man. A man can also develop lipedema if they have problems with their liver, significant problems with their liver, causing their testosterone levels to drop and their estrogen levels to rise. So we do think lipedema is a problem that's tightly linked to estrogen levels, and that's why it occurs more often in women.
Okay, so I'm wondering then, a couple questions. You did use the word obesity as almost a separate concept. Are they separate, or where do they relate to each other, these various fat problems?
Mm-hmm. So I think that's a topic that's definitely under investigation, but I can tell you that in my clinical work with women who have lipedema, one of the treatments I use for them is not a natural treatment. It's an amphetamine. And amphetamines are things like Adderall, which is used for attention deficit disorder. It's phentermine, which is used for weight loss, or dextroamphetamine, which has been used for the treatment of idiopathic edema, and that means edema that we don't know why you have it. And that idiopathic edema occurs often in women. So if I give a woman who has lymphedema an amphetamine, she will lose all of her quote-unquote normal fat tissue, but her lymphedema fat will stay. And the lymphedema fat usually occurs around the hips, buttocks, thighs, the lower leg, and it occurs on the arms in 80%, but the trunk is left unaffected. So there's a disproportion. When you look at a woman, she'll have a large butt, thighs, and then this tiny waist, and usually normal amount of breast tissue. So if I give an amphetamine to a person who has obesity, they will lose all of their fat all over their body. So their all of their fat is responsive to the amphetamine, meaning there are these little receptors on the cells that allow the cells to communicate with the body, and the amphetamines bind to these receptors and tell the fat cells, release your fat, let it go, and they do. And so in obesity, all of the cells respond to the amphetamine normally through those receptors, but in lymphedema, they don't. So I think we can say that, you know, just first of all, there's a unusual disproportion of the fat in lymphedema, and that makes it different from obesity. And secondly, it responds differently to medications than in obesity. And there is overlap. So when you feel the lymphedema tissue, you feel these tiny little beads in the tissue, like little BBs or like beans in a bag or a beanie baby. And in obesity, you tend not to feel that, except right around the lymph nodes. And so that tells me that in lymphedema, there's some lymphatic dysfunction that's generalized, whereas in obesity, it takes a lot of fat to accumulate before the lymphatic system starts to struggle. And you'll see that struggle first around the lymph nodes in obesity, whereas you see it diffusely in lymphedema.
So that would require someone with your level of expertise to differentiate, I imagine. That's not something that your regular conventional, family practitioner is going to really know about, right? This doesn't sound like it's really well documented. Well, it might be well documented, but not necessarily well known.
Correct. However, because millions of people are affected, as part of the TREAT program, which you mentioned in the beginning of the show, I and my colleagues would like to educate primary care providers, especially gynecologists and obstetricians who are going to see young women who may have lymphedema, so that they're knowledgeable about it, they can diagnose it, and they can make treatment recommendations. Because if we leave it all to specialists, then a lot of women are going to remain untreated. And it sounds complicated, but when you put your hands on the tissue, you can rapidly recognize that there's a difference in the tissue. And we are actually developing some tools to allow primary care providers to easily recognize that the fat tissue in lymphedema is unhealthy. It's not normal. It's diseased fat tissue. And at the same time, when they recognize it, they can say, aha, now I know how to treat this.
Where to go. Well, thank you so much for that description, trying to simplify a very complex topic. But when we come back, because we're going to take a little short break right now, Dr. Karen Louise Herbst,
okay.
When we come back, let's go into the treatment modalities, which really are one of those therapeutic regimes which not only is proven, according to your research, to help with these adipose tissues, deficiencies and disorders, but really is super good for you anyway in terms of overall health, disease prevention, more energy. So it just seems like such a wonderful way to go. And we will be back with more right after we visit with the Natural Medicine Chest right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the nutrient known as taurine.
Amino acids are chemical constituents that form the building blocks of protein in the body. The official definition of an amino acid is a compound which contains an amino group and a carboxylic acid. Taurine contains a sulfonic group instead, so is not a true amino acid, although it is often referred to as one. The intracellular concentration of taurine is 10 times that of any normal free amino acid.
Taurine was discovered in 1827, but the significance of taurine in nutrition was not realized until 1975, when the journal Science published a study showing that taurine-deficient cats suffered from retinal degeneration. In 1986, the Annual Review of Biochemistry reported that the amount of taurine present in mammalian milk depends on the species. Natural human mother's milk is rich in taurine, but cow's milk, except for the early milk known as colostrum, is taurine deficient. Pediatrics Journal in 1983 printed a study which outlined several of the biologically significant functions of taurine, and an effort was then made to fortify infant formula by adding taurine.
Some species of animals, such as cats, cannot synthesize taurine within their bodies, and so must receive it through their diet. Humans have a very limited ability to synthesize taurine, so adequate intake through diet and supplementation is important. The principal source of dietary taurine is meat of various types and shellfish. Even people ingesting sufficiently high levels of taurine may develop a deficiency due to the overgrowth of certain anaerobic intestinal microorganisms which consume taurine. Certain prescription drugs are known inhibitors of taurine uptake.
The Journal of Neurochemistry published a study in 1975 which showed that taurine concentrations are extremely high in the retina. In fact, the retina contains two binding proteins specific for taurine. Research has yet to determine exactly how taurine functions in the eye, but deficiency of taurine has been found to lead to the degeneration of photoreceptor cells. Continued studies on taurine have linked its presence to several biological functions, besides being a protector of the delicate tissues of the eye. Taurine helps to neutralize oxidizing agents caused by ionizing radiation. Taurine is present in high concentrations in the normal heart. It stimulates white blood cell motility and protects cell membranes from free radical damage. Taurine has proven useful in epileptics to reduce or control seizures. It helps modulate the transport of substances such as sodium, potassium, magnesium, copper, and iron across cell membranes. Additional research supports taurine's role in preventing gallstones.
So, as you can see, the nutrient taurine may be an important addition to your natural medicine chest.
Welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, and as always, wishing you the best. I'd like you to know that all of the shows here on Progressive Radio Network are archived. So if you're enjoying today's show or you're enjoying it but you think it's a little complicated because the topic is complicated on the radio since a lot of the words, although we're differentiating them, sound very much the same, and I'm sure many people know someone who has some kind of fat disorder, so you might want them to listen to it and even get to know our expert guest today, Dr. Karen Louise Herbst. So if you do, you can find every single show on the archive here at Progressive Radio Network, but we also have an additional special way to get in touch, and that is through our phone lines. And what the station has done is made a dedicated phone line for each and every show. So if those people you know who perhaps don't like to go on computers and do podcasts, they can actually listen to the shows right on the telephone. So here is our number to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. That's 701-719-0884. That number again is 701-719-0884. So you can listen to today's show or the last five shows that we've done. You know, we have done, I believe, over 300 shows just on this. We've done many thousands of shows over the years on all our stations. And you can call in and listen to the last five shows at that number, or you can also find them on the archives at Progressive Radio Network. We want to bring back on board our guest today, Dr. Karen Louise Herbst. And Dr. Herbst is not only an MD, but is also a PhD and is an associate professor at the University of Arizona Medical School in Tucson. And she's the director of the TREAT program, and that is for treatment, research, and education about adipose tissue. So thank you so much for being our guest today.
You're welcome.
And we're talking about the book that you contributed quite a bit to, Lymphedema and Lipedema Nutrition Guide.
Yes.
And that's, you know, really a lot, as you said, on the website there's a lot of information. And, of course, it's a beautiful book. I do recommend that you get it for guidance. I would say lymphedema is probably more well-recognized by so many listeners because you often hear that along with cancer and mastectomies. You know, those are the people who seem to suffer from lymphedema. So why is that, Dr. Karen?
Why is lymphedema more well-known?
Well, no, but why is it caused once people do have a mastectomy or, you know, lymph node removal?
So the lymphatic system is connected to the vascular system. So when your blood flows through your body, it gets down to the very small capillaries, which are the smallest blood vessels in our body. And at that location, those capillaries release fluid, nutrients, oxygen into the tissue, and then the lymphatics pick up any excess fluid from the tissue and cell waste material and transport it back to the vascular system so that the waste material can be metabolized. Any nutrients that are still there can be recycled. And the lymph nodes in the lymphatic system help to filter the blood. So they're going to recognize anything that shouldn't be there and try and get rid of it. And there are a lot of lymph nodes in the body, but there are not an unlimited amount. And so when you cut out lymph nodes in a particular area of the body in association with cancer, for example, especially breast cancer or pelvic cancer, so cancer in the prostate, in the uterus of women, then fluid coming into that area isn't propelled out of the area as quickly as it should be. The vessels weaken, they break down, and then they leak. And Even a single lymph node in an area of the body, when it's removed, could actually cause the development of lymphedema. Usually we see it with the removal of more lymph nodes than just a single lymph node, but there are some what we call sentinel lymph nodes that are really important in certain areas of the body. And if those are damaged by surgery or even an injury, then a person can develop lymphedema. And once you overload the lymphatic system in one area of the body, it puts stress on the lymphatic system in the rest of the body. For example, a woman who has lymph nodes removed on the left side of her body near her breast and develops lymphedema on that arm, if she's tested on the right arm of her body, she can also show signs of lymphedema on that right arm.
Oh, I didn't know that. So it'll cross over.
It'll cross over, exactly. And if you have some women have had lymph nodes in one area of the body removed due to breast cancer can develop lymphedema through their entire body. So their feet swell, their hands swell, and it may not be to a great extent, but it's just a sign that the lymphatic system is now on overload, and we have to help them relieve that pressure on the lymphatic system and help them move their fluid.
So, you know, let's look at some specific recommendations that people can find in this informative book, Lymphedema and Lipedema Nutrition Guide. And notice this is about nutrition, even though you do use pharmaceuticals when appropriate, that the real focus on this book is really about natural remedies and supplements. And number one, I imagine exercise is in there too, big time. But really food. So let's look at the recommended eating pattern in chapter 3 of the book.
Okay.
So I know that we have it broken down into 3 different distinct groupings of foods with a recommendation to eat a big variety, you know, widely and primarily, and then other things in limited quantities, and some to really avoid, if possible, all the time.
Yes. And I think that makes this particular eating pattern easy to follow because it's not a huge long list in either of those three areas. And basically, you can have unlimited vegetables, especially rainbow colored, because we want them to get the different colors have different nutrients in them. And so getting rainbow colored vegetables makes perfect sense. And then fruits, we're a little bit picky about fruits because fruits do contain sugar. And therefore, even though we have a huge list of fruits, we really focus on berries and also citrus fruits. And then the limited quality may actually be foods that are good for you, but we just don't want to overload the body with certain nutrients. For example, on eat in limited quantities is Brazil nuts, and that's one of my favorite treatment recommendations for lipedema and lymphedema. And the reason for that is because Brazil nuts are so high in selenium, and selenium is a mineral, and it's been shown to improve lymphedema in a number of large randomized controlled trials of people who have lymphedema due to cancer and cancer treatment. But if you eat too much selenium, then it, in a few papers that are very intriguing, has shown that you can actually make the body a little bit more insulin resistant, so more in the pre-diabetes range. So if someone is at risk for developing diabetes, they would not want to eat a lot of Brazil nuts.
And well, then you do have it listed very specifically. You say about 3 to 6 nuts.
So 3 to 6 nuts, yep.
Not like exactly. More is better.
Yes, and, you know, the beauty of Brazil nuts, is especially at this time of the year when you are attending your holiday parties, there's usually a mixed nut bowl. And the Brazil nuts are usually the nuts that are eaten the last. And so you go right over to that bowl and you get your Brazil nuts for the day.
Well, that's a great holiday eating tip. One of mine is eat home before you go to a party so that you're not starving. And then you can, you know, pick at those things that you'd like to enjoy just for taste. But if they're one of those things that's on the, you know, eat rarely or never list, you know, you don't overdo it because some parties, that's all that's there.
That's a great idea. I like that tip. Especially
right. It's in
chocolate.
I've written many books, and that one is in Weight Loss, the Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide. So interesting that the recommendation that you have in this book in terms of eating primarily, which a very wide list of choices, is really colorful vegetables. And this diet really does not sound too much different. And you can tell me if it does, if you're familiar with the DASH diet. And the DASH diet is so well researched and is the recommendation that is given both from the American Cancer Society, the American Heart Association, and the American Diabetes Association.
I agree with you. This diet is nothing new, really. This diet makes perfect sense. And if you are okay with eating primarily a plant-based diet, and we know there are a lot of other diets out there, for example, Atkins diet or ketogenic diets or paleo diets. But if you are okay with a plant-based diet, then you're absolutely right. We match a lot of other diets in the literature that have a lot of good evidence behind them and show that they've improved the lives of a lot of people.
And as a clinician, because it sounds like you are involved beautifully both in direct patient care and clinical research.
Correct.
So what has been your experience with people who, in fact, take your advice and, you know, make a drastic, perhaps, change in their diet to be reflective of the recommendations in the book?
I've got some wonderful stories from patients who have started on a plant-based diet, such as the one that we recommend in this book, and it has completely changed their lives. They had skin rashes that have gone away. They've lost weight. They're not as hungry anymore because they're eating plenty of food, so they never go hungry. They never feel like they're starving. They don't feel like they're on a diet. And when I say diet, I mean where they're restricting food. In fact, we're saying eat more, eat more vegetables. So I think I would say quite a lot of people have made very good changes in their lives and have had dramatic results. Other people may not have had as dramatic of a result, but they were able to maintain the benefit of therapies that they undergo. So, for example, for lymphedema and for lipedema, we recommend that they undergo hands-on therapies to help improve the fat tissue and to improve the function of the lymphatic system. If they're not eating a healthy diet and they're eating a lot of processed foods, then that treatment is not going to stick as well, or it's not going to give them as much benefit as when they're eating a really healthy diet as the one that we recommend.
And as a clinician, isn't it satisfying when you see people get results from a change, such as you said, maybe getting massage therapy, reflexology? There's other kinds of lymphatic massages that are very specific for that. Along with the change in diet, you actually see them get well. That's what's so exciting to me about natural interventions, with really no downside whatsoever.
Right.
It's not like it has a big adverse event profile there.
Yep. The only downside is you're going to different stores sometimes looking for all those rainbow-colored vegetables. And I know that if you live in a larger city and have access to a good Asian grocery, they tend to have a lot of vegetables that you've never seen before and that really meet this rainbow-colored vegetable recommendation.
Okay, well, what about in a regular mainstream store? What might some of the foods be that people can select? I mean, I like organic, if possible, and I also always recommend that people check with the Environmental Working Group at EWG.org, because, for instance, let's say you're going to choose bell peppers, which come in beautiful, brilliant colors, you know, but if you're buying ones that are highly sprayed, it might not be the best choice. So there are certain vegetables that would be best to choose organic.
I agree with you. So any vegetable that you can't peel, it would be best to get organic.
Everyone can. What if you live in a food desert?
Not that everyone can. So if you can't buy organic, I think it's good to try and get a good vegetable soap to wash your vegetables as best you can, soak them in water. That helps sometimes.
Those are excellent recommendations.
When you asked about colors, one of the vegetables that I think is super, super healthy, but that a lot of people may not consider all the time, are beets. And beets are bright red. So that's the first part of the rainbow. And cooking beets is great, but also eating beets raw in a salad is absolutely delicious. And I just don't think it's something that people would consider. And beets are relatively inexpensive.
And an easy way to do that is with a grater. Because then you have like these shredded little pieces so they're not a big chunk to chew on if you do it raw. And most grocery stores are now having this beautiful thing that's available. I even take it on trips with me, which are pre-steamed beets. And they're just like in the section where you buy, you know, lettuce and things like that. And they're in a little package, but they're pre-steamed, so they're really soft, but no chemicals or anything is added. So that makes them instantly available for just eating, if you're like me, or like you suggested, put in your salad. And beets are also interesting because in the spiritual literature, they actually relate a lot to women and fertility in terms of being the doctrine of signatures, which tells us that plants resemble something that they're good for. And then when we study it scientifically, we often see that that is actually upheld through scientific investigation. So when we look at beets, because of the fact that they're round, because of the fact that they release red, there are many reasons why shamanic healers have always related them to women's health issues. And then when we look at the phytochemical structure, we see, you know what? They were right.
That's terrific. I love that analogy.
Yeah, so there's so many reasons. Well, we're going to take one more little break right here, and when we come back, we are going to continue our discussion with our brilliant guest today. We're so happy to have you on, Dr. Karen Louise Herf, and the book that she is one of the authors of, Lymphedema and Lipedema Nutrition Guide, and we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
This is Karen Hartglass, host of It's All About Food, and you're listening to PRN, your source for progressive, up-to-date, and inspirational information on nutrition and health.
This is Jim Fetzer, the conspiracy guy, new program appearing on PRN.FM. I'm delighted to be joining a wonderful collection of hosts to delve into the politically loaded events that the government has been motivated to misrepresent to the American people. The biggies being JFK, 9/11, the death of the plane crash that took the life of Paul Wellstone, but also Sandy Hook, Boston bombing. Stand by for more. The show will be Wednesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bhavani, and I'm the host of IE Green with Bhavani every Thursday at 10 a.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. Each week, I discuss food issues in the news, share a recipe, and interview someone in the food, health, or environmental arenas. And I invite you to join me, and you can listen either live every Thursday at 10 a.m., or you can now access my archives directly by dialing 1-701-719-0880. Please listen in or download me at another time by going into prn.fm and finding me in the archives. Again, this is Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Hope to hear from you soon.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Once again, two more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, and I love to hear from you. Get in touch by going to naturalnurse.com. There you can find out about all our classes and workshops. We have a class called Career Paths in Natural Medicine. If this kind of topic is interesting to you and you'd like to find out how you can earn your living participating in natural medicine on so many different levels. And we also have a Facebook page, Facebook The Natural Nurse. And you can find us there. You can like it. You can comment. You can send us questions. We love to hear from you. Today, we have a wonderful guest with us, physician, Dr. Karen Herpf. She is an MD, associate professor at the University of Arizona, and she specializes in treatment, research, and education about adipose tissue. That's why we're talking about a new book that she participated in writing, Lymphedema and Lipedema Nutrition Guide, Foods, Vitamins, Minerals, and Supplements. That's actually the subtitle of the book. So we're very, very happy to have you here as our guest. Now, Dr. Karen, we have as a contact for people to find out more if they listen to the show and they want to go further with it. The website is lymphnotes.com. Is there any other way to contact you directly, or would you prefer if people go through lymphnotes.com?
I'm happy to have people contact me by email. My email is freely available on the internet, and it's basically my full name, Karen Herpf, all one word, no capitals. And the rest of the email is at email.arizona.edu. And they can just go to the University of Arizona website and search for me and find my email there.
Perfect. So thank you so much for sharing that, because you do actually see patients clinically.
I do. I don't see a lot because my main focus right now is research. So I have one full day of clinic at the University of Arizona, and then I see a couple patients on Saturday mornings in the community clinic. And that community clinic was established in order to support a research room. So it's a small clinic, and one of the rooms at the clinic is devoted to research. So we do blood draws, we do biopsies there, we do physical exams.
So and that's in Tucson, I imagine.
Correct. It's in Tucson, Arizona, and we are south of Phoenix. So a lot of people say, "Oh, you're moving to Arizona. You're going to live in Phoenix." No, we're 2 hours south of Phoenix, so we're about 1 hour north of the Mexican border.
Right, and that's where my home is. My home is in Bisbee, Arizona.
Oh, that's a beautiful city.
Yes, it is. And that's where my children were born, on an off-the-grid farm where I raised all my own food and did herbal studies starting in 1964.
Wow, that's fantastic.
That is a really special place, and apparently you've been there because,
yes.
It's really a very unique area. And it's about 2 hours from Tucson, so it's not that far. We had to go to Tucson all the time. My kids were in their 40s, this is a long time ago, to buy anything because there's no, it's out in the boonies there in Bisbee, but it's a really historic town that was actually the capital of Arizona during the gold rush days. So it's an interesting historic place if anyone wants to take a fun trip and then go to Tucson and be part of one of your studies. That would really go very well together as a wonderful adventure.
That would be great.
Now, what are some of the supplements? We don't have too much time yet left, but what are some of the supplements that you discuss in your book?
So one of the supplements that we use a lot is diosmin. And diosmin is a natural component of the rind of citrus fruit. So when we squeeze the rind or put the rind in water, you're getting a little bit of diosmin. You also get diosmin when you drink lemon juice. And what they do is they isolate the components of the rind, and a lot of it is another compound called hesperidin. And they take the hesperidin and convert it to diosmin. So it's slightly synthetic when you buy it in supplement form, but it's still a natural component. And the diosmin has been shown to do two really important things. One, it reduces inflammation around the blood vessels. And this is really important in terms of disease of the veins, because people with lipedema and lymphedema can also have a venous disease, we call it. And that means that their veins become slightly dilated, or they can actually be insufficient. They just don't do their job as well, and blood leaks back in the wrong direction. And the diosmin reduces inflammation around all of the blood vessels so that the amount of leakage from the blood vessels goes down. And that's important because if you're leaking more fluid into the tissue, the lymphatics have to work harder, and eventually they're going to wear out, and we don't want them to wear out. The diazomen also improves lymphatic pumping. So it does those two really important things. And if anyone who has some extra fluid on their body takes diazomen and it works for them, they'll know pretty much so right away. They tend to go to the bathroom a lot more as the body clears out the excess fluid.
So now the research has actually been done on this isolate, but would you recommend that people take, let's say, organic citrus rinds, let them dry, I do this, and, you know, because I take lemon and water with some baking soda in the morning, I actually keep the rinds, I let them completely dry, and then I put them in a coffee grinder, and it just makes a perfectly fine, excellent powder that can be used, mixed into anything. So obviously that would not be a measured amount of diazomen.
Right, and I don't think it's important, unless you're doing a research study, to get the exact same amount of diazomen every day. You just want to get an amount of diazomen that improves your symptoms. So I think that's terrific. I haven't recommended that, but I think I'm going to have to try that myself. I do recommend taking the avocado seed and using that as a really potent antioxidant. So that's another way to get food to help reduce inflammation in your body. But I don't think a lot of supplements or natural products like the rind of citrus fruit improves lymphatic pumping. I think diazomen is pretty unique in that. The only other one that I know that has been proven to do that in evidence-based studies is butcher's broom. And butcher's broom is a pet name, I guess, for a plant called Rusca suculeatus. And it was named butcher's broom because it can be a woody plant, and the butchers used to use that plant to scrape the meat scraps off of their
cutting
boards.
Oh, I never knew that. I love that. I use this herb all the time. I never heard that particular traditional story. Thank you.
So I think butcher's broom, if someone were going to use butcher's broom or diazomen to improve lymphatic pumping, that would be beneficial. The only thing about butcher's broom is that it actually functions through the sympathetic nervous system. So in order for it to work, you really need to activate the sympathetic nervous system. So you actually have to take a lot of butcher's broom to do that. And so we're talking, if you take a supplement over the counter, it's 2 to 5 to 10 grams a day.
Well,
so that's
a lot
of capsules. And when you do that, when you activate the sympathetic nervous system, you actually can get heart palpitations, you can have trouble sleeping, you can get tremulous, so it's always good to talk to someone in the know, a healthcare provider who knows about butcher's broom before taking it. It also interacts with Coumadin, which is a
blood
thinner.
You know what? That is great information, but unfortunately we are out of time. You are a wonderful guest. There's so much more information in the book, Lymphedema and Lipedema Nutrition Guide. Check out lymphnotes.com. Thank you so much, Dr. Karen Louise Herb.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, listeners. Get in touch. Naturalnurse.com, Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Until next time, this is Ellen Camai, hoping that you stay healthy.